welcome to the very first Logan's Trading Company podcast. Better yet, we could call it Logan's Garden Shop podcast. Tell you what, why don't we call it this? Logan's Power of Gardening podcast. I like that. My name is Bryce Lane, and I'll be your host for this reoccurring podcast all about gardening. Now, I'm a retired horticulture instructor from NC State University, and I've taught there since 1981, taught all kinds of students everything gardening, plant identification, general home gardening, interior plants, and a whole slew of other classes. So I'm really well prepared to be able to talk to you about gardening as well. But moreover, I'm a gardener. And y'all, I've been gardening in the same spot in Raleigh, North Carolina since 1983. 36 years, I've done all my gardening in the same place. I've got about a quarter acre, which means I've got really good soil, but I've also made all my mistakes in exactly the same spot. And believe me, there's lots of mistakes that I'll be happy to tell you about as we go along talking about gardening. Now, one thing, when I say gardening, I want to make sure we're all on the same page. Because sometimes when you say gardening, people are thinking just vegetables. When I say gardening, I'm talking about all aspects of growing plants, whether it be houseplants, foundation plants around your home, the home landscape, even your lawn, as well as the vegetable and fruit garden that you might be interested in growing. When I say gardening, that's what I'm referring to. And so when I say I'm a gardener, I really am talking about I'm somebody that really enjoys plants and loves to grow them. So now that we got that out of the way, I want to tell you a little bit about what my goals are for this podcast and what Logan's goals are too. First and foremost, I hope that when you listen to one of these podcasts, you will learn something that you didn't know before. It's a knowledge-based podcast. We're going to be talking about what the science says about horticulture and growing plants. But I'd leave you a little bit short if all I did was impart knowledge. I could have sent you a PDF file. No, the second goal besides knowledge is inspiration. I'm really committed to inspiring you in this whole arena of gardening, because out of inspiration comes application. And that's the third goal for all these podcasts, is that you would apply yourself based on what you've learned, that you'd be so inspired that you'd say, you know, I think I'm going to try that. Because you see, if you listen to this whole podcast and you walk away and do nothing different, then I would have failed you and we would have failed you relative to the information that we want to share with you. Remember, it's not just information, it's inspiration and application. So be looking for those nuggets, be looking for those things that you might be able to do and apply in your own backyard. And as a gardener, I'm going to tell you whether or not it's easy, it's hard, whether you should do it now or do it some other time. I won't lie to you about that, and I won't make it sound like it's way easier than it really is. Because let's face it, gardening's hard work. It's a wonderful, wonderful hobby. It's a great craft. But that's where we're coming from relative to this podcast. So where are we going to start? Well, guess what? It's fall. Winter's approaching. We got a fall coming. I know many of you are thinking, fall? It was just 93 degrees a few days ago, and now you're talking about fall and winter approaching. But we want to talk about fall planting. Makes sense in a lot of different ways. And then again, it's kind of a weird thing to be thinking about planting. Now, if you're a gardener like me, when spring comes, you've been cooped up inside all winter long, there's nothing more exciting than getting out, buying new plants, bringing them home, and planting them in the garden. But you know, it may not necessarily be the best thing for the plant. It's the best thing for the person. I admit, psychologically, it is a wonderful lift. But perhaps that plant might fare better if we chose a different time to plant it. So we really want to talk about some of the basic principles when it comes to planting. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how to plant, how to choose plants for planting, and a little bit of the biology behind establishment. Because, y'all, that's the really important word when we think about planting plants. Planting annuals, perennials, woody plants such as shrubs, trees, vines, just about anything. It's all about establishment, getting that plant established. So where are we going to start? I think we need to start below ground. See, the problem is most gardeners think about 80 to 90% of the time when they think about gardening, they're thinking of above ground. I do it too. I'm always thinking about what's going on above the soil. And that's a big problem. because that means we're only spending a very small amount of our time thinking about what's going on below ground. But believe it or not, it's what's going on below ground that's going to influence the success of the plants that we plant, especially if we choose to plant in the fall. So I have a colleague at NC State. He's retired and not there anymore, but he taught a class called in landscape maintenance, and he talked all about planting. And here was this little saying that he would say that I found quite amusing, but it really, really talks about the importance of plants and how they can be successful when you plant. It goes something like this: no rooty, no shooty. Now, I know that sounds a little bit silly, but really what he was talking about is if you don't have roots, you're not going to get shoots, you're not going to get flowers, fruits, and all those things that you want above ground if you don't have a good root base to start from. And did you know that when plants are grown in the nursery, by the time they get from the nursery to your home and in the ground in your home or in a pot, about 50 to 75% of the absorbing roots of that plant have been destroyed. Now, it's hard to believe, but well over 50% of the roots that a plant has when it's being grown in the nursery disappear somehow based on the way they're dug, potted up, moved, and then planted by us gardeners, results in that much root loss. And so you can see how, if the absorbing roots are lost in a plant, how much trouble they're going to have absorbing the necessary water nutrients for growth. So the primary cause of failure when we plant plants, no matter what time of year we plant them, is water loss. And it's water loss due to the absorbing root loss. Now you see, most plants have three kinds of roots. Now picture it with me, if you will. If you're looking at a tree and you think about the roots under the ground, okay? The first kind of root doesn't have any absorptive capacity at all. That root is called a support root. Supportive roots. Now, all trees have supporting roots, shrubs have supporting roots, but believe it or not, even the smallest of annuals that you would plant, bedding plants that you'd plant in your garden in the springtime after the chance of frost, they have a certain percentage of support roots. These are the roots that don't do a lot of absorbing. No, they're supporting that plant. They're the scaffolding that keeps that plant above ground, healthy and tall. Second kind of root is called a transporting root. Now, the transporting root doesn't have any absorptive capacity either. It's not sucking up water or nutrition for the plant. What it's doing, it's transporting the water and nutrition that are absorbed by, you guessed it, the absorbing roots. And so a plant's power, the power of a plant to establish itself in the soil, is really a function of the absorbing roots that they're able to produce. Now, you just heard me say that 50 to 75% of all plants' absorbing roots are destroyed, removed, before that plant gets in the ground in our homes. So we have a real challenge here. How can we help a plant establish itself without a lot of absorbing roots? And that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about why fall is such a great time to facilitate that establishment. And speaking of establishment, here's a campaign I've been on for a long time, trying to help people understand how plants grow and how we can facilitate and help them get established in their new place where you plant them in your own garden as quickly as possible. Because the faster they get established, then the less maintenance and the less effort they're going to require from you in keeping them alive. Because that's why a lot of plants die. We put them in the ground, we water them a few times, and then we go on our merry way, and that plant's not yet established. So let's talk about establishment. In 1981, I moved to Raleigh, North Carolina. Brand, young, married man with a little baby. We moved to Raleigh from up north. Yes, I'm a transplant. You can call me a Yankee if you want to. But we moved here, and I started my job, and man, I needed help. I needed help getting to know this community. I was, you could say, not very established. My wife and I didn't know where to go grocery shopping. We didn't know what stores to go to. We didn't know, you know, where the local DMV was. All those things required assistance from others, okay? And until we could get established, we had to rely on and we needed help, all right? It's no different when we take a plant and we transplant it into the ground in our gardens. It's like it's just moved from another place and it's not yet established. It takes time for it to become established. It takes time for those absorbing roots to regrow and give that plant the ability to absorb the water and the nutrition it needs. Up until that time, it's going to need help, and it's going to need help from us gardeners. Now, what's fascinating about establishment is most of us have never even thought about how long it takes for a plant to become established. So let me give you some parameters. For those little bedding plants that we plant in the springtime after a chance of frost, you could pretty much figure that they're going to take maybe a couple weeks to establish themselves. They're fast growing as long as the soil is warm, and that's one of the reasons why we wait until the 1st of May in central North Carolina to plant annuals, because we want that soil temperature to be warm enough and moist enough to stimulate those absorbing roots. So you can pretty much count on a couple of weeks from the time you plant your bedding plants that they're going to become established. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have to water them when it gets dry. It just means that they're a little bit less dependent on you for everything they need. Okay. Now let's go to the other end of the spectrum. You plant a 6-foot tree. Maybe it has a 1-inch diameter trunk and is about 6 feet tall. Believe it or not, it takes about 2 years for that tree to become established. 2 years, it needs some help from you. How many of us have thought about tending to a newly planted tree for 18 months to 2 years? It's kind of a scary thing, but there are ways that we can shorten that establishment time, and there are ways that we can help plants grow better and get established faster. First of all, let's look at what kinds of things influence how fast you get established. You remember the story I told you about me moving to Raleigh? Okay, so 15 years later, my brother and his family moved to Raleigh. He's in the same position. He doesn't know where to go, what to do. He needs help. He needs help getting established. But in this case, he moved to a place where there was family. And I already knew the ropes. So he was able to establish himself better because he could rely on me to tell him, oh, don't go there, go here. Oh, you want to get your oil changed, go here first. And so that was a factor that influenced how fast my brother and his family got established here in Raleigh. Well, the same thing occurs in plants. I don't mean that if you have other plants that are related to the plants you're planting, that they'll establish faster. Although, if you've planted certain plants in the past and you understand how fast it took them to establish themselves and maybe some little tricks that you learned on those, if they're related, well, then you can help them get established that much quicker. All the more reason to know what kinds of plants you're planting and knowing their names, because then you'll be able to tell if they're related to one another. But here's the deal. Establishment can be affected by species. There are certain plants that just throw them in the ground and walk away. That's how fast they're able to establish themselves. We don't need to spend a lot of time tending to them because their genetic makeup is one where they're very, very used to being planted, and they have a very fast root regeneration. There are a lot of native plants that grow very quickly, and so we need to know our plants, and we need to know what species they are to get a good feel of that. Second thing, how big the plant is. Believe it or not, smaller plants establish faster than larger plants. Now, I'm not trying to encourage you to go out and buy the smallest Japanese maple because it'll establish faster. However, that's the truth. Now, remember, it's what do you gain, what do you lose? Okay, you buy a small plant, it's going to take longer for it to get larger. Buy a larger plant, you have an instant plant, but you might have to tend to it for a longer period of time. You see the difference? I've also noticed that if you buy a plant on the smaller side, it gets established quicker, and believe it or not, it tends to grow quite quickly because it is established quicker, and pretty soon you won't remember when you planted it or how big it was when you planted it. Now, believe me, I'm not advocating that we go out and we buy the smallest of plants, but if you have the choice between a plant in a 5-gallon container, a plant in a 10-gallon container, keep in mind, same species, same plant, except the size of it, keep in mind that you might not have to worry so much about the length of establishment time for that smaller plant. So that's something to consider, size of plant. The kind of irrigation habits you have. Do you have an irrigation system on your property? Well, then establishment time might go a little bit quicker because water tends to be one of those things that we have to make sure those plants have. So irrigation practices as well. Not only that, but how the plant was grown. Are you aware of how it was grown in the nursery? Now, we use the term nursery to describe a lot of things related to plants. But when I talk about nurseries, I'm talking about those places that grow the plants. They grow them and then they sell them to places like Logan's, a garden center, okay, where the plants are distributed, sold and distributed, displayed here. But if we look at that plant, do we know how it was grown in the nursery? You might be saying, well, plants go in the ground, they grow, the nursery digs them up, and they send them to the garden center. Well, that's a little bit of a simplistic view, and if we understand the ways that plants are grown, then we're better able to treat them and help them establish themselves more quickly. So we'll talk about that in a minute, okay? And the last thing is when we plant the plant. Planting time influences how long it's going to take for that plant to become established. Believe it or not, there are some times of the year that are better for planting than others. Now, y'all, please don't misunderstand me. That doesn't mean that there are times during the year where you can't plant. I've planted plants in every month of the year in North Carolina, in Raleigh, North Carolina, and they've survived successfully. It's not so much the time of year. If we know the time of year, then we're going to have to adjust how we care for that plant after it's been planted. Obviously, if we plant in the dead of summer, in the middle of July, water's a much bigger issue than if we plant in January, right? And so we got to take that into account, all right? So those are the things: species, size of plant, irrigation practices, how it was grown in the nursery, and planting time. So we'll address those here as we go along. All right, think about it. Okay, how it was grown in the nursery. I don't know how many of you have ever been to a nursery that grows plants, but it's kind of interesting. There are a number of different ways that plants are grown in the nursery. Think about this. Plants, traditionally, 40, 50 years ago, most woody plants were grown outdoors in the ground. We called that field grown. It was a nursery, had a field, and the plants went in the ground. Field grown nursery. And when those plants were ready to be sold, they dug up the plant. Now, most of the time, they would dig up the plant with a ball of earth around the roots. Okay. Now, in digging it up, roots are lost, and that's where some of those absorbing roots get lost. So think about it. They dig up the plant, they wrap it in cloth, and we call that burlap, and that's traditionally what's been used, a cloth material that eventually decomposes. It's totally organic, and it rots right off, but bald, if you will, root bald in burlap, and we call that bald in burlap, B&B. So when I was in college, the very first day of nursery management class, the professor handed us a sheet of plants that were no longer grown in the field. No, these were the new plants. It was a whole new technology that was coming out. No longer did they have to plant all the plants in the ground to grow them. Now plants could be grown in the container. So guess what we call those? This is a highly technical term, container grown. All right? So these are plants that actually are grown from either the time they germinate as a seed or the time that they've rooted as a cutting all the way to the time they're sold. Think about it. Container grown. So 40 years ago, I'm in college, and I get an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and there are 40 plants on that sheet of paper, and the nursery production professor says, these are the plants that are able to be grown in containers. All the rest have to be field grown. Okay, fast forward to 2019. Nursery production classes all across the land hand out an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And on that paper, about 40 plants. Except now, that's the list of the 40 plants that can't grow in containers. They're the ones that are still relegated to being grown in the field. How the technology has changed. Now, ask yourself, what would be the advantage of growing a plant in the container versus in the field? There's all kinds of advantages. Think about it. You control the medium that's in that container. So potting soil, nursery soils have been engineered and designed to maximize root growth and plant growth in those containers. So that's one thing. You've got a soilless media, if you will, that's used to grow those plants. Not only that, but think about you have 100% of the root system when you get ready to ship that plant. When that plant's ready to go to the garden center, all the roots are in that container. They don't have to be damaged or cut like they do in a field-grown operation. Okay. Not only that, but think about the weight. Think about the freight. Think about the cost of the plant. Believe it or not, we pay a little bit less for container-grown plants and a little bit more for field-grown plants. Although, think about the other side of the coin. The container-grown plants oftentimes require a little bit more labor because out in the nursery, you get a heavy wind. What happens to a container-grown plant? Blows over. Now you've got to hire labor to right those plants. Okay. But think about space. In a field-grown nursery, you're going to have a huge acreage to grow a lot of plants. Container-grown nursery, you can put plants much closer together because you can move them around. How about overwintering? You can take those container plants and you can cram them together in a greenhouse and protect them during the winter, or you still have to have all that land in a field-grown situation. Container-grown plants give you way more flexibility, and oftentimes you get a faster-grown product to a saleable size. Now, If you're in the nursery business, this all makes a big difference. But if you're the home gardener and you're coming to Logan's to buy plants and you walk out through the nursery, you're going to see most of the plants are in containers. Now you just got to ask the folks at Logan's, hey, were these plants container grown or have they recently been put in a container? You'll also be able to see which plants are B&B, bald and burlap, because they're going to be out there with a giant ball of earth around them, and they're going to have that burlap around them. Sometimes now, these days, burlap is replaced with a plastic woven material, plastic burlap. I think you can see the writing on the wall there. Make sure you know that it's true burlap before you plant it, because if you have plastic burlap or some kind of treated burlap, what are you going to do when you plant that plant? You've got to remove that treated or plastic material. If it's true burlap, and if you can verify that it's true burlap, then it's just important to peel it back, stuff it down in the hole so you don't damage that root ball, and it'll rot within 6 months to a year, depending on when you plant it. But you got to make sure it's not treated, because if it's treated burlap, well, how do you know it's treated? Oftentimes it's been sprayed with a chemical, making it more of a blue color. Take it off. Okay, so here's what I do. For all the years I've been planting, anytime I plant a B&B, I remove the burlap. And I carefully, gently remove it because I don't want to get caught thinking it's just plain burlap when it's been treated or if it's plastic burlap. So don't even worry about it. Just remove it. That's the best thing to do. And of course, then if you're planting a lot of container-grown plants, which most plants now that are sold in garden centers are, then it's just a matter of taking that container off and prepping the roots for planting. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. So that just gives you a little bit of background about plants. Now, annuals and, you know, bedding plants and perennials, they're most typically all grown in containers, and then they're grown in enclosed structures, either poly houses or greenhouses, where the environment can be influenced a little bit. And of course, houseplants, you know, have to be grown in greenhouses up and down the East Coast, a lot grown in Florida, also grown in containers. So it's just to be aware of that and think about that. And here's another suggestion. Don't be afraid when you're shopping at a garden center. You're here at Logan's and you're looking for plants and you see a shrub that you're really interested in a 5-gallon container. Don't be afraid to ask someone here at the store or even dare yourself to grab that shrub at the base of the shrub and just tug on a little bit to take a look at the root system. There's nothing illegal about looking at a root system of a plant. You want to inspect the plant. When you buy plants, you want to inspect them from the top to the bottom. And by doing that, you can actually get a good feel for the root system. It's really a good thing to do. And here's another little secret. If you talk to the folks here at Logan's and you ask them to show you the root system, they're going to be really impressed with your garden prowess. Okay? They're going to know that this person's serious about gardening, and they'll help you out a whole lot. Don't be afraid to ask, because they'll help you. They'll open it up, take a look at it. And if you're not sure whether that root system is what it's supposed to look like, ask them. They're very, very helpful here at Logan's. You want to be sure to do that. But don't be afraid. Don't just assume. Container grown and B&B or bald and burlap. Field grown, bald and burlap, container grown. We call those container grown nurseries or container nurseries. In North Carolina, they've got a really cool technique with container-grown nurseries. It's a new nursery. It's called Pot and Pot. That's POT-N-POT, Pot and Pot. And this is a nursery that actually digs a hole. They put a pot in the hole. Then they take the plant that's in a pot, and they slide that pot down into that pot in the hole. Now, why do you suppose they would do that? Think about it for a second. Well, thunderstorm blows through, you get a downburst, and the wind comes through at 30, 40 miles an hour. Typical container nursery. They're spending the next day and a half taking all those plants that blew over, putting them back up. Okay. What if that's pot and pot? Now it's down in a hole. It's secure. It's like a stake. It doesn't blow over. So think of the labor costs there. The second thing is that root system's down in a hole. So the temperature of that root system is moderated. You're going to have a much better root system if plants are grown pot and pot than if they're container grown out on the soil surface. Okay. Now, nurseries do a lot to protect the root systems in container-grown plants, so they don't need to worry so much. But I just thought it would be kind of cool to talk just for a minute about this pot-and-pot technology. Its upfront cost pretty high, but once they get it established, it pays for itself very quickly with reducing labor and whatnot. All right, you following me so far? We're talking about establishment, the importance of establishment, how the plant was grown and how that influences establishment, how we treat it when we plant it. And we'll get back to that here in a second. But now, the question of all questions, the mother of all questions, if you will. The other day, I was out in my own backyard planting, and a neighbor came over, walked up to me, and he said, I see you're planting. I said, yeah. He said, well, how big should the hole be? The number one question that everybody wants to know when they're planting something is, how big should the hole be? Well, I'm going to tell you. Stop thinking about the hole and start thinking about the hole. I know, you're confused. What did he just say? Well, let me repeat myself. Stop thinking about the hole, the H-O-L-E, and start thinking about the hole, the W-H-O-L-E. Y'all, the key to successful planting is creating a soil environment that's going to be most conducive for plant growth, for root growth, and for establishment. And if you just go outside in your lawn and you dig a hole and you don't concern yourself with the soil and how the water drains or anything else about it, and you plant that plant in that hole, then there's a lot more opportunity for failure. On the other hand, if you evaluate the situation and start thinking about planting holistically, stop thinking about the hole, start thinking of planting plants in beds. The landscape designers are doing a great job in promoting a new landscape. I call it new, but it's been around for a while. And the whole idea is start thinking and planting in plant beds. If you're going to plant vegetables, plant in beds. We've been doing that for years. The idea of planting a tree in the middle of your backyard is not planting in beds. Okay? Tree roots spread way out beyond the branches, and if you've planted in a hole right in the middle of your backyard, those roots are competing for water and nutrition with your turf grass if you have a lawn. That's not conducive for good root growth for the turf or for the trees. So think about prepping beds. Think about creating landscape beds where you're going to put more than one plant. Think about a flower bed. Think about a perennial border. Here's my favorite bed. I call it a mixed border. If you come to my garden, North Raleigh, you'll see a series of beds where there are trees, shrubs, perennials, annuals, bedding plants mixed together in a border. A border is an area of your yard that's nothing but soil, and you've prepped that entire soil for good growth. So if you're rethinking about planting and you want to start this holistic philosophy toward planting, stop thinking about the hole, start thinking about the hole, the W-H-O-L-E. And how do we do that? We prep that soil. Now, there's all kinds of ways to prep the soil. And I'm going to tease you a little bit here and tell you that we'll have a podcast coming up that talks all about improving garden soils, understanding and improving garden soils. But this is one thing I can tell you. You need to incorporate materials into that soil depending on how well that soil looks to you. Okay? And I always recommend adding one or more of the following three things. Soil conditioner. Find a good soil conditioner. Oftentimes a soil conditioner is made up of pine bark, horticultural grade pine bark, which tends to be very small particle size of pine bark. But any type of a commercially available soil conditioner will work really well. Manure. Add composted manure, whether it be cow manure or chicken manure. But a good organic source of manure is another good way to build soil. And the third would be compost. Compost is broken down organic matter. It's organic matter from plant residue that is starting to decompose. And if you mix one or more of those into your soil, then you're prepping the bed. Then it's easy. You plant that plant. If you're going to plant in a hole, people always say, how big should the hole be? My recommendation is as big as you can make it. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but all right, if the root ball was, say, a foot in diameter, I'm going at least 6 inches to a foot out on all sides and about 6 inches down. I'm loosening all that soil, and then I'll plant in that hole. But y'all, I'm really not for planting in holes. I'm really more for planting in beds, and start thinking about beds. Like I said, we'll talk more in the future about how to prepare beds, how to build soil, because the most important thing we can do as community members in Raleigh, North Carolina, is build our soil. Did you know that when you have a well-built soil, 20% of the water that falls from the sky, 20% more infiltrates that soil than if you don't have well-built soils? Okay, let me rephrase this. Stormwater runoff. You can reduce stormwater runoff from your property by 20% if you build a good soil. I'm not even talking about putting a plant in there yet. Think about that. By adding plants, you improve water infiltration. The most important thing we can do as community members in urban environments is to reduce stormwater runoff. And the best way to do that is build garden beds with good soil. We can increase water infiltration and reduce the runoff, the amount of water that leaves our property, which is becoming a huge issue in municipalities across the country. So think about that as you go and plan for your gardening and for your planting. Think about the bed. Think about the hole and not about just the hole. The other thing you need to think about when it comes to the hole is, and the bed, what are you planting? Take an azalea, for instance. Azaleas. Where do they grow? Where are azaleas native? Well, Asia, but also up in the mountains in North Carolina. Where do we find azaleas growing? Well, we find them growing in highly organic soils in semi-shady locations. We call them understory. Same with dogwoods. Where do we see dogwoods growing? Our own native dogwood growing in the Piedmont and in the foothills and up in the mountains. We see those dogwoods growing in areas that are forested with lots of organic matter in the soil, and they're generally right on the margin of the forest and a field, which means they're getting partial sunshine but shady locations. So why would we take those two plants and plant them in unadulterated clay soil in full sun in Raleigh, North Carolina? To me, that's a prescription for failure. No, if you want to use a native dogwood or azalea and grow it here in Raleigh, North Carolina, then you need to find a place in your own property that's going to mimic those conditions that we find them growing naturally, partially shady and highly organic soils. And you say, well, Bryce, I don't have highly organic soil. That's why we prepare the bed and not just dig a hole, because we need to prep that soil so it has soil conducive for the growth of that plant. Then we can go ahead and plant it. And know that rich organic matter added to that soil will help facilitate the growth of those azaleas and dogwoods. You remember the drought we had in 2006, 7, and 8? A lot of our native dogwoods died in Raleigh. But wait a minute, they're native. They should have survived. Yeah, they're native, but they were planted in non-native type locations. They were planted in places where they had no business growing. They were getting too much sun, and the soil wasn't conducive for their root growth. A reduction in absorbing roots and too much sun resulted in those plants dying, okay? And yet we couldn't understand it. They were native plants. So think about that. We need to understand the plant. You got a silver maple? You're going to plant a silver maple in your backyard? Dig a hole, throw it in there, have a nice day. Okay, there's a plant on the other side of the spectrum. It's got a root system that'll grow through concrete. You don't have to worry about it. Sure, prep the bed, dig a good hole, loosen the soil, but you don't need to be as concerned. So when you're selecting plants for your home landscape, think about, research, find out what these plants are growing in their native regions, and don't be afraid to ask. Because I'll tell you what, any independent garden center, come to Logan's, you ask the folks here, they're trained, they know the answer. And better to ask and find out that, oops, maybe that plant, I don't have a place for it, than to buy it, bring it home, and then kill it yourself by planting it in the wrong location. So, the last thing I want to talk about on this podcast is best time to plant. Think about it. If you're going to plant a plant that's a B&B, it's important to peel that burlap back, slide it off carefully, put it in there, and make sure when you plant trees that you plant those trees at grade. Please don't plant the trees too deep. They're not going to escape. One of the biggest killers of roots in trees and shrubs is we plant them too deep. Conversely, don't plant them high. Don't create these giant soil pimples for your plants. And oftentimes we see professional landscape companies doing that, and there's this giant mound or volcano where the plant was planted way high. Well, that's come out of the fact that we know that oxygen is important for root growth, and by planting it a little bit higher, we can ensure that those roots are going to get plenty of oxygen. But a little bit higher is different than a giant soil volcano or a pimple. Plant it at grade, make sure that root collar. And y'all, the root collar, if you look at a tree, is where the trunk and the root meets. It's where the trunk starts to widen at the base and where the roots begin. That should always be exposed. Don't ever cover that up or put mulch over that. Keep the root collar exposed, and you can't go wrong with those trees. All right? When it comes to planting container-grown plants, the most important thing to be concerned about is whether the roots are growing in a matted form around the pot. You've perhaps, I'm sure, you've opened up and taken a plant out of the container and you can't even see the soil for the roots. That's very important. Those roots are not going to change their behavior just because you removed the pot. You have to go in and slice those roots with a knife. Remember, when you prune things, it stimulates root growth. So we call that scoring. Take a soil knife, take a sharp knife or a shovel, and cut those roots. Maybe anywhere from an inch to an inch and a half, vertical cuts apart all the way around. You need to disturb that root system to encourage those roots to grow. Do you see why container-grown plants actually lose about 50% of their root system in the planting process, even though they weren't removed in the nursery? Because that's the way we got to make sure that those roots will grow when we plant it in the beds or the holes that we're planting them. Okay, so people always say, well, when's the best time to plant a plant? Well, obviously, there are some plants where the best time to plant a winter annual, like pansies or snapdragons or ornamental kale and cabbage, is right now, in the fall. Okay, you don't want to be planting those, which thrive in cold temperatures, in the springtime. So those types of winter, we call them winter annuals because they're only going to grow for the winter season. Now's the time to be shopping for those. Maybe a little bit early, end of September, but October, November, get those plants in the ground, get them, grow them, bring them home and get them in the ground. They're going to thrive. Remember, though, establishment still goes for your winter annuals. You've got to make sure that you water regularly afterwards. We'll talk about water frequency here in a second. But when it comes to herbaceous perennials, you know, those plants that grow, they flower, then they die back to the ground, and they come back again the year later. Those can be planted in the fall. They can be planted in the winter and the spring. Oftentimes, we plant based on availability, okay? But perennials, just like trees and shrubs, it's a one-shot deal. They're collective. When can you plant them? Well, if it's B&B, you could plant a tree or shrub any time of the year because you've got a self-contained root system. Well, if it's a container grown, guess what you've got? You've got a whole plant. It's like a little mini nursery. You can plant at any time. So anytime you can dig a hole, you can plant a plant. But like I said, remember, water loss is going to be that number one killer of transplanted trees and shrubs. You plant that container-grown hydrangea in the middle of the summer, you had better be on it with watering, and you're going to have to water for quite a bit of time. Think about this. Establishment. A tree, 5 feet tall, with an inch diameter, at about a foot up from the ground, requires, on average, 10 gallons a week during the establishment period. 10 gallons a week. That's about the equivalent to about an inch of rain a week. But if you don't, then you need to add that 10 gallons per week. What about a medium shrub? You know, a shrub that's maybe 3 or 4 feet tall. 10 gallons per week. What if it's a smaller shrub, a shrub in a 3-gallon or a 5-gallon container that you might be planting in your landscape? Well, then it should be probably about 5 gallons per week. Guess what? That's not a lot of water. But if you don't give it, it's going to suffer. So you've got to maintain that regularity. You say, well, Bryce, I'm going on vacation. Well, you have a cat, you have a dog. What do you do for your cat or dog? You arrange for it to be taken care of, whether somebody comes to your house or it goes to the kennel. Guess what I do when I go on vacation? I get my neighbor Dan next door, come over, and I tell him, you need to take care of these plants. And I just planted this one, so it's going to need 5 gallons of water a week. And we're going to be gone for 2 weeks. So poor Dan's got to water that plant twice, 5 gallons. Okay? Don't worry, I make it worth his while. What about a flower bed? You know, where you have herbaceous perennials and annuals and things like that. Well, the general rule of thumb is 5 gallons per 10 square feet per week. Do you hear that? 5 gallons per 10 square feet per week. And then we'll talk lawns here just for a second. 15 to 30 gallons per 10 square feet per week. Y'all, do you see how high-maintenance lawns are when it comes to water? They need almost 3 to 6 times as much water per square foot than shrubs and flowers and trees that we grow in our garden. Now, turf is a plant, too, and it does all the great things that plants do, reduce stormwater runoff, sequester carbon from the atmosphere to combat global climate disruption, but turf's high-maintenance. Now, maybe you know somebody who's high-maintenance. It doesn't make them evil, does it? No, it just makes them high-maintenance. And so please understand that when you start growing turf, it's more of a commitment when it comes to establishment than other plants. But that's the kind of an approach we need to take. And remember, a 1-inch diameter tree, 5 feet tall, is going to need that treatment, going to need that 10 gallons per week for about a year and a half. whereas a shrub may need it only for about 6 months to a year. These are guides. They're not rules. And you need to, when you practice these, you'll see. But this is when planting time comes in. We're going to compare fall planting to spring planting. Let's talk spring planting, because guess what? Everybody loves to plant in the springtime, right? It's fantastic. Why is that? Well, it feels absolutely great. There's nothing more exciting for me than to come to a place like Logan's and shop in the springtime. I have a budget. I blow that budget through the water, and I come home with way more plants than I intended to. I love that. Then I put them out on my patio, and I look at them. For about a week, I think about where I'm going to plant them, and I try to match those plants with the best environment. Okay? It feels great. Why? Because the plants have flowers. They're showing off their what they do right here in the nursery. And when you get them home, you plant them, you get that immediate gratification. You get an immediate growth response. All right, well, what's the disadvantage? All right, think about it. In the springtime, what is the above-ground environment telling a plant to do? It's warm. It's sunny. The temperature, the days are getting longer. The temperatures are getting better. So what is the plant being told by the environment? Welcome. Knock yourself out. It's time to grow. Plant, put on some leaves. Let's see those flowers. Everything about the above-ground environment is telling that plant to grow. Think about it now. What's the below-ground environment like? Well, it's moist. Could be quite chilly. It depends on how cold the winter was and how wet the winter was. If we've had a cold, wet winter, guess what? The soil's lagging behind. So what is the soil environment telling the roots to do? You know those roots that have 50 to 75% of their absorbing roots gone? What is that soil environment telling those roots to do? Telling it to chill out. Don't put on growth. Got to wait until it gets warmer. Do you see the disparity? So we have an above-ground portion that's being stimulated to grow. We have a below-ground portion that's got the brakes on. And remember, we've lost 50-plus percent of those absorbing roots. Do you see how hard the challenge that plant has to get established? Not only that, but when will heat load show up? When are we going to start getting temperatures that really put a heat load on that plant? Well, if we plant in March, it's less than 2 months away. We can get some really wicked temperatures in May. They're going to put way undue stress on that plant, and it's going to slow down its establishment. Now, I'm not saying I don't plant in the spring, because I do, because I love planting in the spring. All the advantages? Oh, my gosh, think about it. You plant it, boom, it starts to grow. It's a great, psychologically, it's wonderful for humans to be planting in the spring. Okay, now let's talk fall. Think about it. If we start planting October 1st in central North Carolina, all right, what is the above ground environment telling that plant to do? Days are getting shorter, kind of dry, okay, temperatures are lower. The environment's telling that plant to shut down. It's time to get ready for winter, right? Now you plant that plant in October, what's the root environment being told to do by the soil? It's warm, it's moist. Hey, that plant's being told, welcome. Set down some roots. Enjoy yourself. Get yourself established. And how much demand on that root system is it receiving from the upper portion of the plant, which, in essence, is preparing for dormancy? Way less. So interestingly enough, we get good root growth in the fall and early winter. We don't have a high demand above ground, so there's less pressure. Not only that, but pests aren't getting interested in plants. There's not a lot of soft, tender tissue to infect, so there's less pest pressure as well. Okay, think of the disadvantages of planting in the fall. I buy a Japanese maple, I bring it home, I plant it, and then all the leaves fall off, and I got to sit there and look at a naked tree wondering whether it's dead or whether it's just dormant. Psychologically, that's a bit unsettling. Oh, gardener of little faith, we've got to understand that we're actually doing our plants a service by planting them in the fall. But we have to wait until spring to see how it responds. Say, well, what about perennials? Perennials are dying back. Why would I want to buy perennials in October? They're not going to do anything except just continue to die back. Same reason. That perennial's got no pressure for growth above ground, and the roots have time to establish themselves. So, y'all, I'm not saying that you ought to change your habits to plant all the time and only in the fall, but we ought to really think about upping our game when it comes to planting in the fall. Garden centers do a great job of stocking lots of plants that can be planted in the fall. We have to think about what our expectations are when we plant those plants in the fall. And when we do, think about water stress. We 10 gallons a week for that 1-inch diameter tree, that 5-foot tree. 10 gallons a week. Once we get through October, it's kind of a dry month. The rain starts picking up in November. There's less demand for water. We might even drop that 10 gallons a week to 8 gallons a week. But we're still getting root growth. All we've got to do is remember to make sure those newly planted plants get water. Okay, and by the time spring comes, you've got that root mass. You've got that established root mass. And so when the demand for growth up above comes, what have you got? You've got a root system that's much more better prepared to respond to those needs for water and nutrition. It's fantastic, right? And then when heat load comes in May, that plant's much better able to withstand the heat load and the drought and the dry conditions that summer brings, right? Now you're saying, well, Bryce, you planted it 4 to 6 months earlier. Of course it's going to be more established. Yeah, but think about how much work you've had to do to help it get established. So y'all relax. Change your expectations. Start thinking about upping your planting in the fall. I'm going to tell you a secret too. Sometimes, and I can't speak for Logan's right now, but sometimes fall planting yields good prices on fall plants in the garden centers. Because the garden center's thinking about winter too, and they want their inventory to get lower so they don't have to protect them in the wintertime. You might just find some really good deals on perennials and trees and shrubs when you plant in the fall. Don't wait too long, though, because after the millions of people listen to this podcast, they're going to flock down to garden centers and buy up those plants in October. If you wait till November or later, you might end up with nothing. So think about it. All things planting, this is a great time to prep your beds, get them ready for planting. Start planting in October, November. Guess what? I've even planted a lot in January. The only thing that's going to limit what you plant in your garden in the fall and early winter is what you can get your hands on and what you can get a hold of to get in the ground. But as soon as they get in the ground, the roots are going to establish themselves and those establishment times are going to be shorter. Still keep vigilant about watering and tending to those plants, even those fall planted plants, through the winter and into the spring. But it's not going to be anywhere near the challenge that we have in the spring and in the early summer. I'm still going to be planting in the spring, don't get me wrong, but now I've got even more months to plant because I understand how roots grow and how they respond to the environment. Well, I just looked at my watch and time's really gone by quickly here. That's really what I wanted to talk to you about on this maiden voyage, if you will, of the podcast here for Logan's. And we just hope that you'll tune in for more podcasts. We'll talk about soil. We're going to talk about bulbs. We've got all kinds of great plans to talk about growing plants. So until next time, I'll expect to see you in the garden, just like I'll be in the garden too.